Back here at Baseball Control in Toronto, Mike Wilner here with you. The Blue Jays fall 6-4 to the Cleveland Indians. You can't walk the world. But five walks come around to score for the Jays. They finish up a road trip 5-4. They win a series. And you got to wonder, though, how much better it could have been if not for the debacle in Minnesota on Thursday night with the walks. And more walks today helping the Indians to a win that they were handed, really didn't earn. It is time for the Blue Jays talk. The phone lines are open. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance. 1-888-666-0590. Give me a call. Talk about the Blue Jays. And let's see if our callers today actually lay the blame on the people who should be blamed for this 6-4 loss to the Cleveland Indians. Before we get to the calls, though, a little bit more from Jerry Howarth and Joe Siddle back in Cleveland.
Thank you, Mike, right here in Cleveland, as Cleveland wins at 6-4. Just a little moment here, one of those aw moments. A little girl about 2 years old was about 10 feet away from home plate as the kids are running the bases, and she got close to home plate and then veered off to her right to run into her daddy's arms. That was so cute.
In her Easter dress.
In her Easter dress. Well, Cleveland wins at 6-4 for the play and player of the game. And the two go hand-in-hand right here. Let's go and talk about the player of the game brought to you by Tip Top Tailors. It's all about style. Tip Top Tailors, your menswear shop. Joe, who do you like?
I'll give it to David Murphy, the right fielder for the Cleveland Indians. A big hit. Took advantage of Aaron Loop's walks. He had to make one pitch. Aaron Loop could have gotten out of that mess, but David Murphy did not let him. Big key double. Driving in three was the difference maker.
Mike, who do you like?
I'm going to give it to Michael Brantley. He was the only one who got any hits off of Brandon Morrow over the first five innings. A homer, the RBI double. He walked right in the middle of that Aaron Loop mess as well. Murphy's a good call. I'm leaning towards Mickey's kid.
Thank you, Mike. And for me, Joe, I've got to go with Murphy, because if he pops up or grounds out, it changes the whole ball game, and it really makes Aaron pay for the career-high three walks.
Yeah, it just was very uncharacteristic of Aaron Loop today. I think everybody was surprised by it. Had a chance to get out of it and unfortunately could not make one pitch when he had to.
So Cleveland takes full advantage. That gave them a 5-4 lead. They added a run in the seventh and they win at 6-4. The Blue Jays with a good road trip. Could have been a great one with a win, but 5-4 they'll take. They'll take a 7-6 overall road record home, and at home just 3-3, off day tomorrow. And then join us Tuesday night from the Rogers Center. Baltimore in town, R.A. Dickey against Miguel Gonzalez. Orioles for three night games, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Red Sox in to the Rogers Center next weekend. That's it from here as we send it back to Toronto and Mike Wilner.
Thank you, Jerry. Joe, you too. Tom Young, enjoy the trip back and the off day tomorrow. We'll see you at the ballpark on Tuesday as the Blue Jays begin just their second homestand of the season. They wound up going 5-4 on this road trip. Could have been a 7-2 road trip if not for all the walks. Eight of them in the eighth inning on Thursday night. And Aaron Loop with two out and nobody on walks a bases loaded in the bottom of the sixth with the Blue Jays up 4-2. Then gives up the three-run double to David Murphy. Should be noted that these are the only two blown saves that the Blue Jays bullpen has had all season long. They just happen to have come within the last 4 days. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Those of you who are enjoying a lovely Easter dinner, we hope that we're a pleasant interruption and that you give us a call to Blue Jays Talk It Up. We're taking your calls up until the bottom of the hour all across the Sportsnet Radio Network. And then we'll hold on to it until 5 o'clock Eastern time on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Give us a call. Matt Killer Brown will take your call. And if he likes you, he'll put you on with me again, 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. We lead things off with Dan in Airdrie, Alberta. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike, I've been listening all year long, doing a great job, and you've made a lot of comments about Gibbons being a terrific manager, and you made a comment about who you might lay the blame for this loss on, and I really think walking three guys in a row, I know a lefty's coming up, but Loop being left in there, I think, is rolling the dice just a little bit. Don't you think? Your comments?
Well, everything's rolling the dice, right? I mean, you never know exactly what's going to happen, very obviously. But when you look at Aaron Loop, you're looking at a guy.
Strikes.
Pardon?
You need strikes. You need strikes in that situation.
Well, he threw a strike. And it got ripped down the left field line. When you're talking about Aaron Loop, you're talking about a guy who has been arguably this team's most reliable relief pitcher for 2 years. He did come in, get two quick outs, and then walk three guys in a row, which is horrifying. But you've got David Murphy coming up, who does not hit left-handed pitchers. You've got Loop, against whom left-handers are 2-for-10 this year, hasn't walked a lefty all season long. Going into today's game, and he walked Brantley, so there was the one lefty. This is the guy who gets this out in the sixth inning in most situations in the season.
Yeah, you know, and Loop has done it before. He's been a terrific pitcher at getting left-handers out. I agree with you, but man, that's a hard pill to swallow today, I tell you. But anyways, they're coming home, and I really like the way the team looks. I really do.
Yeah, you know what? It could look a lot better if not for the two massive meltdowns Thursday night and tonight. A 7-2 road trip would have been unbelievable. A 5-4 road trip is good, but doesn't feel good because of the way it ended with two of the last four games of it. But yeah, I mean, what it comes down to is Aaron Loop has been an incredibly reliable guy ever since he's been in the major leagues. He's been reliable. Today was a career high for him, the three walks. And he gets lefties out like crazy. Didn't happen today. Tony is in Toronto. Hello, Tony.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of talk about, team players. And, everybody's supposed to play for the team.
Uh-huh.
Gibbons wasn't playing for the team today.
What?
Loop walks. Everybody has good and bad days.
Yep.
Loop walks three guys. Hey, you walk one. You walk two. You walk three.
Excellent counting.
It's a bad day for Loop.
Yep.
It's kind of obvious, isn't it?
It's kind of obvious
so
that
if
he
Gibbons
walked
was,
three
was
guys
a team
in a row.
Player,
yeah.
Then he would be playing for the team.
And instead he's playing for?
He's playing for Loop, and oh, Loop will work it out. Hey, there's a lot of players on this team that would have liked to have seen this win, including the fans. I'm really upset. I do get upset when managers make bad decisions. They could have. This game was in the bag. They've had some really good hits. Everything is working tickety-boo. And you leave a guy in there. Why?
Well, I just explained it.
You can work it out because, this is an individual that needs to work it out. There's an incredible bullpen back there. What is going on is the question.
Well, obviously, you're seeing it through a lens that is slightly detached from reality, but that's okay. I don't know how you could possibly see this as John Gibbons doing something for the benefit of Aaron Loop rather than for the benefit of his team, but that's very obviously the way you've chosen to see it. I don't. What's in it for Gibbons or Loop or the Blue Jays?
That's just what I'm wondering. What's in it? Why leave him in there? What's in it for?
Well, but
what,
so why does that mean to you that this is a selfish move on the part of the manager? I don't understand where your leap.
It's not
how you get there.
It's not selfish.
Well, you just said he's not being a team guy.
Exactly. So it's not selfish for Loop's sake, but it's selfish for the sake of the entire team and the audience.
No, saying that's not enough. You have to explain that because it makes zero sense to me.
Well, do you consider that if he'd have put another pitcher in, the opportunity, if you walk three straight and then you leave that pitcher in, look at the odds.
I still don't understand your point.
Oh.
It's not a very good job of explaining why it's a selfish move.
I'm sorry about that, Mike. It's just very frustrating to see.
Sure, it's frustrating. Oh, there's no question that it's frustrating, Tony. The idea that this game is in the bag was a little, I mean, it's the sixth inning. You're up by two runs. Hardly in the bag. But it's enormously frustrating. It's terrible to see a guy go out there with two out and nobody on and go walk, walk, walk. But you don't try to draw any greater truths from it than, wow, that was frustrating. Boy, that sucked. And the Blue Jays gave a game away. That's what happened. Tom's in Waterloo listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Mike. One ground ball and it would have been different, eh? I wanted to mention something.
A strike would have been nice.
I wanted to mention something Buck mentioned yesterday, and I thought it was really neat, is that Allison, when he called Francisco in, manager of Buffalo, before he come up.
Gary Allison,
he
yeah.
He just mentioned to him, he said, they've been running hard since camp. And I thought it was kind of neat, maybe a good reflection of the team. So I just wanted to mention it.
What does that mean?
Well, I think they've been working hard, you know, and I know Francisco was running today too, so... They've been running hard since camp.
Francisco 1-for-3 with a walk again today, just like he was yesterday.
But, anyway, that's what he mentioned to him. I just wanted to get it in.
All right. Thank you. Sure. Blue Jays lose at 6-4 to the Cleveland Indians. Joe is in Fredericton, New Brunswick. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike. At the beginning of the game, Greg Zahn was saying that Morrow should, instead of squaring his shoulder up to third, really point it towards home and throw. And for me, I think that's a little bit unreasonable to ask a pitcher to make pretty much that much of an adjustment in the season. Is that possible, or is it almost like a batter asking a batter to make just a change in his swing?
Well, I didn't hear it, so I don't know exactly what Greg said, so I'm kind of loath to comment on it because there's always a little bit of broken telephone. But I don't think that you can fairly ask someone to completely overhaul their pitching motion in the course of a season.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's exactly what he said. I don't know if that's what you heard. I know that things get lost in translation a lot of the time. So again, not going to comment specifically on what he said, but no, I mean, you can't ask a guy to change entirely what he does, especially at this point. And Brandon Morrow threw too many pitches again today, but going into the sixth inning, only one Indian had gotten a hit off of him. He's got to get the pitch count down, and he's got to get deeper into games, which is something that, you know, applies to pretty much every Blue Jay starting pitcher, with the exception of Mark Burley this season. But Brandon Morrow wasn't bad today. They could have used another inning or two out of him. Blue Jays lose at 6-4 to the Cleveland Indians, 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Jamie is in Toronto listening on our flagship, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Hi, thanks, Bill. There's a question for you.
Sure.
Leaving Encarnacion in.
Yep.
Bases loaded, ninth inning.
Yep.
With the way he's hitting.
Uh-huh.
I was surprised in that judgment call by Gibbon.
I don't think you should have been surprised. He's been their best hitter the last 2 years. He's off to a crappy start, but he's off to a crappy start. You don't pinch hit for Edwin Encarnacion with the bases loaded and two out in the ninth inning.
When I appreciate he has batted very well for the last 2 years, I'm just looking back at the last, you know, number of games, and is this the position you want to put him in to see if he can break out of?
You'd rather have Moises Sierra there in that situation?
I don't know who, but I was just...
Well, that's
you
know, your, but that's your option. That's it. That's, Edwin or Sierra. Yeah.
Not much in the depth chart. Okay.
Well, no, question. It's not that there's not that much of a depth. I mean, that's a silly conclusion to come to from that. It's that.
Well, if I've only got one option, it didn't feel like. You know,
well, you've already used a pinch hitter. You've already used a pinch runner in the same inning. Rightly so, because you want the meat of your order coming up with a chance to win a ball game. And, you know, you don't pull the rug out from under someone because they're in a slump. You know that you will need to count on certain people over the course of the season. You understand track record, and you understand that we're 19 games into a season, so barely a tenth of the way through, and guys have ups and guys have downs. But you don't pinch hit for your best hitters ever. Certainly yeah. not in a spot like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. You just can't. It's not fantasy baseball. This is the real thing. Mike is in Toronto. Mike, you're on the Blue Jays Talk.
Hello, Mr. Wilner. I must say, I listen to a lot of ball games. It is generally a pleasure to listen to you after the games, which I do regularly.
Oh, thank you.
Because you are a very knowledgeable fella, well-spoken and all of that. But I do have a bone to pick.
Sure.
And I do find that when it comes to certain issues, this issue today about the choice to leave the pitcher in after he's walked three is one example. Another example, if I'll just mention it in passing, is the, you know, the two-hole, you know, Bautista batting two versus three.
Yeah.
I think there are arguments on the other side. The way you talked to the couple of fellows that called in and expressed disappointment they left him in there, they're only expressing what I think everybody was listening to the game, everybody was watching the game, was wondering when he walks three straight and you got a guy coming up with a bases loaded in a one-run ball game. You're all thinking, is he really going to leave him in? I know there's an argument for leaving him in, and you've made it, and it's a good one. I get it. Lefty versus lefty, he's a reliable pick, all that sort of stuff. But I think there is an argument on the other side. And of course, you're talking 20/20 hindsight at this point, right?
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that you can't question the decision.
And, well, of course you know, you can question the decision. And I'm telling you what I think. And what I think is you've got a guy who doesn't hit lefties coming up. You've got an extraordinarily reliable left-handed reliever who left-handers don't touch. Right? So, I mean, that's my argument.
Okay. Well, I've heard the argument, but there is an argument on the other side, and I think we're all thinking the same thing. And it was a little bit of a head-scratcher for some of us. If I may, I don't know if you'll tolerate this, but as far as the Bautista batting second thing,
yeah.
You know, there is an element of psychology to this game. You know, I know that I'm a big fan of sabermetrics. I think Colby Rasmus gets really short shrift as a center fielder, because you look at his numbers in terms of getting the balls and handling balls out there. He's taking away hits, what, about a hit every game and a half or something? You add those onto his batting average, his numbers become astronomical. He's a really valuable player, more so than the traditional metrics allow for. But there is a psychological aspect to the game, and if Bautista, because of experience or whatever it is, isn't comfortable hitting there, again, that's something that has to be factored in, I would say.
Yeah, but then for me, and I understand that there's a psychological aspect to the game. I don't think players are robots, and I don't think you just plug them in and they do what they do. But if you explain to a player, hey, this is where we need you. This is where you serve us to the best possible, then that should be enough for a guy who wants to win to say, okay, you know what? I don't see it, but let's see what happens. Let's do it.
I get the argument. If I may say, though, my concern in a way is actually for you, because I like listening to you, and you are knowledgeable. The points you make are well articulated, but I do find that from time to two, I think probably some of the fans get a little... Some of them are just plainly irrational. I get that, too. And I get that they're allowed to vent, and you have to put up with that. And I remember last season, listening to you, as you were talking people off the ledge, I thought you did a marvelous job of remaining sane and calm and, you know, and defending the players who really deserve defending amidst all the vitriol that was there last year. Having said all that, I think you might give a little shrift to all of us who are wondering, are you really going to leave that guy in? It didn't work out. If it had, it'd be different. That's all. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I don't know what you want me to say. I honestly don't know what you want me to say. I feel as though the way things were done were perfectly, I mean, they didn't work out well. And there's no reason to believe, as so many people seem to, that if Neil Wagner had been brought in or whoever else, things would have gone differently. But by me having an opinion about something, it doesn't mean that you're not allowed to have a different opinion about it. It just means that I don't agree with it. And you want to convince me, you're more than welcome to. So far, it hasn't happened. More of your calls coming up all the way till 5 o'clock on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and on sportsnet590.ca. We'll let the network go at the bottom of the hour. The Blue Jays talk continues. It's a Honda postgame show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Your mechanics might not be there, your delivery, but you have to find a way to get a hitter out right here.
Murphy lines one down the left field line. Fair base hit. That goes all the way toward the corner. Two-run score. The ball kicks off the padding around third, heading home Cabrera on a three-run double by David Murphy. And Cleveland goes out in front 5-4.
The Indians would tack on another run in the seventh inning, but the damage done right there. Aaron Loops, three straight walks in that three-run double by David Murphy. And the Blue Jays lose it 6-4 to the Cleveland Indians. A good road trip, could have been a great one, but for a couple of bullpen meltdowns, the only two blown saves of the season for your Toronto Blue Jays result in losses Thursday night and today, and they were especially ugly. Can't walk the world. You just can't. And the Blue Jays issued six walks today. Five of them came around to score. The Blue Jays hitters accepted five walks from Cleveland Indians pitchers, but none of the Jays walks wound up scoring. Now that I'm counting, it looks like there were only four. But none of them scored anyway. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, is 1-888-666-0590. A frustrating loss. And unfortunately, it takes away from a very good road trip, which the Blue Jays won series in Baltimore and Cleveland. And they come home after a nine-game trip, very possibly with a share of first place in the American League East. That's good. Owen is in Montreal. Owen, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Hello, Mike. Hello. So I was watching the game, and after the meltdown, it got a little bit frustrating, and I actually turned off my TV after the eighth inning. And I heard in the ninth inning we got close to almost making it, you know, making it extras or winning the game. What happened?
They loaded the bases with two out. There were a couple of walks and a hit, and then Edwin Encarnacion hit a hard ground ball right up the middle, but with the shift on, the Indians turned it into an out, and that was the game.
Oh, that's a shame, Edwin. Wow, I didn't even realize. Another thing I just wanted to comment quickly on, too, was I know this wasn't from today, but I didn't call in yesterday. I just wanted to talk about how yesterday and this whole season, actually, Burley has been fantastic. You, like, obviously can't keep up this pace about, what, a 0.5 ERA or whatever it is, but do you think he can end the season with an under 3 ERA? And maybe compete for, and if he continues this, maybe compete for the Cy Young even?
If he continues this, he'll win the Cy Young unanimously.
Okay, I mean, like, at a reasonable pace, with, like, a, I don't know, like a 3 ERA or whatever.
Well, there's no, he's given no indication over the last, what, decade of his career that he's capable of doing that. So, no, I don't think so. I think that Mark Burley's going to come back down to earth, and there are going to be a couple of starts where Mark Burley's going to come back down to earth pretty hard, and people aren't going to enjoy it, and I'm going to get phone calls after the game talking about how he's old and terrible and washed up, and they should trade him. But that's just the way things go. No, I think that, you know, enjoy this start, bank these wins. It's wonderful, but there's really no reason to believe he's going to be able to maintain this level of effectiveness or anything close to it over the course of 6 months.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Have
okay.
A good day.
Sorry about that. I don't mean to pour cold water on things. But hey, true is true. You don't get a million times better at age 35 than you ever were before. Mark Burley is a guy who typically will have an ERA around 4, 375, 380, around 4. Right now it is 0.64. Certainly hope that you know, he just keeps throwing strikes, getting good defense, and good things happen, but he's not going 32-0. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. We're taking your calls right up to the top of the hour. Take your tweets as well at Wilderness590. Joe is in Toronto. Joe, you're on the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, I think I'm gonna try to convince you.
About what?
About the loop situation.
Okay, without the benefit of hindsight, convince me.
Without the benefit of hindsight, I have two witnesses sitting beside me. And when the game was going on,
witnesses.
When he was pitching to the last guy, I said, Gibby has to get him out right after this batter. My son said, hey, he can't get him out during the batter. I said, I agree. He's got to get him out right after this batter. And this is why I love baseball, because baseball is the only sport where you don't have to have hindsight. You can have foresight. That's the beauty of the game. We could all be managers. Now, nothing against Gibby. He's been having a fantastic year. But sometimes you have to go. You can't go just by the book and how a pitcher has pitched in the past. You have to see what the situation is. He had no control whatsoever. I don't care if Cy Young was on the mound today. After walking three batters the way he did, you get him out. There's no doubt about it.
So that's you're convincing me by saying that you wanted him out of the game as opposed to convince me?
What I'm trying to convince you is that why baseball is the greatest game on earth.
Well, there's no question that baseball is the greatest game on earth.
You have foresight.
Except that, you know, you're when you suggest that the way he walked those guys, he had no control, you do realize that he had two strikes on the last two hitters that he walked. That he threw a first pitch strike to the first guy before then four pitches right out of the strike zone. But he had a...
You're getting technical on me, okay?
No, I'm not. I'm getting true on you. He was 0-2 on Brantley before he walked him, and Brantley fouled off a couple of two-strike pitches. And then Cabrera fouled off three straight 3-2 pitches before he drew the walk. So it's certainly not a case of, you know, like Sergio Santos the other night where Aaron Loop absolutely couldn't throw a strike and you had to get him out of there because he's killing
it. Sergio Santos couldn't feel the ball. That was something else, but no one could have felt the ball. It was way too cold.
Okay.
But Loop, he had it in your gut. He felt it that he was off.
You did.
Granted, he gave him three chances. Fine. But once you load the bases, get him out. I don't care who it is.
All right. And again, you're entitled to feel that way. I respectfully disagree. Again, he had a full count on two hitters before with multiple two-strike pitches being fouled off. So it's not like he walked three guys on 12 pitches or even on 14 or 15 pitches. He walked three guys on 22 pitches, 10 of which were strikes. He got ahead of David Murphy, 0-1, before he gave up the three-run double. So the idea that Loop was incapable of throwing a strike is dismissed because it's just not true. Well, it's not the way it happened. Now, you felt get him out after three walks. A lot of people felt get him out after three walks. More than entitled to feel that way. But again, you have a strong left-handed pitcher who is very strong against left-handed hitters. Against a left-handed hitter who is very weak against left-handed hitters. I don't think that there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that Aaron Loop has to be taken out in that circumstance. Patrick is in Owen Sound. Hey, Patrick.
How you doing, my friend? I think the word, I don't want to quit my point, but just with the three walks, maybe loyalty. Maybe it falls for a little bit of loyalty. I make the move as I want my best defensive catcher, Navarro. I don't use him for a pinch hitter. He's catching. It makes a whole difference of pitching. Your best catcher all year, catching the pitchers really well this year. Maybe I do that change, and I have him. You do it with outfielders. I bring him in defensively before I start bringing in relievers. But that being the case, my thing is on my favorite player on the Jays is Lowry. I love the aggressiveness, but it's so aggressive that a light's got to go off in this young man's head that it's ruining his game. It's affecting his game and all the way around his running the bases to the point where the coaching, I think, has to step in. I go way back to the first series. running with just his IQ on the bases. You watch him. He hits a ball up the middle. Escobar clearly double clutches the ball. He's not going to get him at home. Lowry, if he's looking peripheral vision to the middle of the infield, he watch him running. He doesn't even watch what's going on. He's got Lynn at second, who goes straight home. Should have been out at home, but he knocks the catcher down. Where's Lowry? 50 feet past. You do that when you're 13, 14 years of age teaching kids, but he's so aggressive, he's not thinking smart. His IQ and is taking it into the... They need to calm him down. He's 50 feet. The ball goes 10 feet. He has to be staying in on second. Makes it a 4-2 ball game with his RBI up the middle, but he should be 4-2 with a guy on second. The next game, they throw into second base. They're not trying to get him at home. Where is he? He's three-quarters down the baseline. If he looks to the in middle of the outfield, peripheral vision, you'll see they're not coming home. He's jumping up in the air and sliding. He's not going to last the season the way he's carrying on, the way he's running the bases. And it's affecting his at-bat. And I just wish a light would go off. It could take 2 or 3 years. Maybe that's what we at Seattle seen more mature guys coming up. But the way he carries on the bench, he was 2-for-26, and he's carrying on with Batista and that. How about sit down, watch the game, and let it come to you? He needs to let this game come to him. The coaches have to help him. Sliding when he doesn't need to at home, running 50 feet past first. When the ball goes 10 feet from the catcher, he needs to be standing on second base. But he's so aggressive, it's affecting his whole game. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. I can't remember those situations that you're talking about from 3 weeks ago. Brett Laurie is very aggressive. What I like about it is that it's not put on, that it's legitimate, this isn't false hustle, and it isn't, hey, look at me and look how much I want to win. I don't agree that someone on the bench in a slump should be sitting there buried his head in his hands and thinking about how terrible he is. What I'll say is that it's easy to come down on Brett Laurie right now because he's hitting .130. And I don't think it's the over aggressiveness. It's the whole Red Bull fueled persona that Brett Laurie has that has resulted in him getting off to a crappy start. And I admire the fact that it has not affected his defense one bit. I don't know about the peripheral vision thing or about sliding into home plate when he doesn't have to slide. I love the fact that he runs through the base, that he runs through the bag at first base, though he doesn't do it. He does it more than others, not enough for my liking, because you can see that he hits the brakes the second he hits the bag. And a lot of guys do that rather than just run through the damn thing to get that extra, 24th of a second there. I don't think Brett Laurie's aggressiveness is a major problem. But it would be nice if he was having a little bit more success at the plate, and that will come. I honestly believe it. Happened last year, started off terribly. Finished up great. It will come. It's a very, very talented, very young guy. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We are Blue Jays talking it up right up until the top of the hour. Let's go to Alan in Toronto. Hello, Alan.
Loop, today kind of reminded me of Jose Valverde. Jose Valverde always had a high wire act too. The last couple of years in Detroit.
Yeah, he's not very good.
I disagree with you totally that Bautista should be hitting number second. Have you changed your view now that Reyes is back? Because
now that Reyes is back, for sure, Jose Bautista's fine hitting third because you have a quality hitter batting second. My argument that Bautista should be batting second only applies when there's a really, really, pardon me, a poor hitter batting second, a significantly poorer hitter like a Kawasaki or a Rasmus or whatever, whoever they were using at that point. Yeah, only when the guy's not very good. When you have a decent hitter hitting second, I have no problem with Jose Bautista batting third.
And his intentional walks have been drastically reduced with with Edwin hitting behind him, hasn't it, for the last 2 years? Because I don't think you're going to want to put him on, even if it's a righty-righty situation, I don't think you're going to want to put him on to face Encarnacion. Encarnacion hits pretty good against righties anyway, doesn't he, the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, today we saw an intentional walk, basically, to Bautista in the ninth inning. I mean, John Axford didn't come close to throwing him a strike, and it was because Edwin is having such a hard time right now. So today's not exactly the best day to bring that one up, but you look at the numbers on the intentional walks to Bautista. Yeah, in 2011, he had 24 intentional walks. In the 2 years after, he had 4. So the emergence of a decent threat behind him absolutely has affected Jose Bautista's intentional walks.
I'm very encouraged with the starting pitching. They've got 4 shutouts thus far. They didn't hit their 4th shutout last year till June the 5th, so they're way ahead of the game. And let's see, they're ahead. Last year at this time they were 7-12, and this year they're one game above 500. So I'm mighty encouraged. What happened last year means nothing this year, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm with you. I agree with you completely. Last year is in the past, and this year completely different. Yeah, they started 10-21 last year. They are 10-9 right now, and it's interesting. And I've mentioned this a few times this season. Is that in order to win 90 games over 162 game season, all you have to do is win 5 out of every 9, and the Blue Jays won 5 out of their first 9. They won 5 out of their next 9. Both 9-game segments began with a loss. And now this third 9-game segment of the season has begun with a loss as well. Very weird, but an interesting pattern. And now they're 10-9. They lose 6-4 to the Cleveland Indians today. Aaron Loop, 3 straight, 2-out walks in the bottom of the 6th, followed by a 3-run double down the left field line by David Murphy. Dan is in Peterborough. Dan, how's the flooding down there?
Oh, it's all right now.
Oh, good.
It started to, it's still, water levels are high, but it's starting to level out a bit.
Well, we're thinking about you guys down there with all that stuff. We know you're good Blue Jays fans in Peterborough. We just want you to stay dry.
Okay, I was going to make one statement, and the way I've looked at it for a couple of years now, especially with the way Gibbons uses the, and I'm not against Gibbons, but the way he uses the relief pitchers, most of them only pitch at most, usually one inning, okay?
Yeah.
And they're very effective when they pitch 15 to 20 pitches. But once they get up into 20, 25 pitches, even Casey Jansen, he loses it. And that's my argument. I've said it for a while.
Okay, you know? I don't know how accurate it is. I mean, it would be good if you had some numbers for me that you could tell me.
I don't have the numbers.
Right.
I don't have the numbers. I just noticed that, like, Loop did great for the first 2-3 batters, okay? Mm-hmm. And he had a chance to get out with the first 1 or 2 that he walked, okay? But I just find, like, and even Santos last Thursday or whatever it was, he loses after 20, 25 pitches.
Well, let me give you some actual facts here. Maybe this will help.
I'll hang up and listen to you on the radio.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I like it when people come with theories and then we can test those theories and see whether they're true or not. If you come to me with actual numbers, it does help. I'll say this: Aaron Loop, 2013, on his first 25 pitches had an OPS against of 690, which is great. On any pitch after the 25th, he had an OPS against of 388, which is just stupid good. So sort of ridiculous. So Aaron Loop's numbers in 2013, and I go by 2013, not this year because tiny sample size. Aaron Loop's numbers drastically improved after 25 pitches this year. Last year, Casey Jansen, can't really say this because he only had 3 plate appearances against him after he'd thrown 25 pitches, and that's because he was so remarkably efficient as a closer for the Blue Jays. Very rarely was he forced to throw more than 25 pitches. So only 3 plate appearances against him, not even worth looking at. But I will say there were no hits against him after 25 pitches. Let's take a look at a couple more guys. Why not? Steve Delabar threw 25 pitches last year in all of his outings, had an OPS against of 696, also pretty good. After 25 pitches, an OPS against of 513. So after he'd thrown 25 pitches, hitters were 4-for-19 against him with one walk and 10 strikeouts. So that would, again, this theory is not under investigation, not holding any water to this point. Let's go on. There are two more guys we can look at. Sergio Santos, we cannot because he didn't throw more than 25 pitches in any one outing last season. And let's take a look at Brett Cecil so that we get through basically the entirety of the Blue Jays bullpen. Cecil last year pitches 1-25, an opponent's OPS against of 607. Very, very good. Pitches 26-50. Again, only 7 plate appearances, but the opponents were 0-for-6 with a walk and 4 strikeouts. So we take the theory. We analyze the theory. We see that it's completely incorrect, that all of the Blue Jays relievers showed drastic improvements in efficiency after throwing 25 pitches in a relief outing. Those who could be measured, Casey Jansen and Sergio Santos, and really Cecil, tough to measure. But nobody, no Blue Jays reliever got worse after 25 pitches in 2013. Today, Aaron Loop, one good. No two ways about that. He walked 3 guys in a row after coming on to get 2 quick outs. So did his efficiency drop off after 25 pitches? Well, I mean, you can make the argument that his efficiency was never really there. So he did get those 2 outs on 5 or 6 pitches and then the walks. But no, under the glare of science, your theory does not hold up. Step away for a second. It is the Blue Jays talk. We'll come back. We'll get you set for the second homestand of the season, the Baltimore and Boston coming in to visit. So all AL East for the Blue Jays coming up, the homestand at Rogers Center. We're still checking out the Twitter at Wilderness590, and the tweets are, which is the same thing. And the phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Blue Jays lose it 6-4 to the Cleveland Indians. It is the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. That's going to do it for us here on the Blue Jays talk. Jays fall 6-4 to the Cleveland Indians, taking the shine off of what could have been a tremendous road trip. Instead, it was just a good road trip. But the Blue Jays walked the house Thursday night in the 8th inning. 8 walks to set a club record, turn a 5-3 lead into a 9-5 loss. Today, Aaron Loop, 3 straight 2-out walks in the bottom of the 6th inning, then gives up the 3-run double, turning a 4-2 lead into a 5-4 deficit, and the Blue Jays go on to lose it 6-4. The only 2 blown saves of the season so far, which is pretty good considering the fact that they are without their closer in Casey Jansen. But 2 blown saves leading to 2 losses in the Blue Jays so far this season just can't seem to come back. They've only won 1 game this year in which they've trailed at all at any point. Hopefully that changes soon. They have a day off tomorrow to rest up, then come home for 3 against the Orioles, 3 against the Red Sox. We are back Tuesday, 7 o'clock Eastern, for 7:07 first pitch, R.A. Dickey against the righty, Miguel Gonzalez. Thanks to all of you for listening, for taking the time to call. Appreciate that a great deal. Enjoy your off day. Thanks to Matt Brown, to Derek Brandeo. We will see you on Tuesday.